I know you and I both kind of had our ears perk up, or what, it took attention to something that's going on in Utah, but certainly could be foreboding for what is in store for our own Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. On Monday, Trump signed some executive orders to cut, to drastically and radically cut Bears, Ears, and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments in Utah. 90% cut to their original size. And this is in order to, you know, privatize or allow private entry and private use of that land, despite the fact that there is important indigenous ancestral stuff there, that it is meaningful to the indigenous people of the area, and that it's very important, you know, economically to the area as well. And when Trump first took office, there was the possibility being mooted about that Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks might also be cut in some way. And so that seems to have sprung back into people's minds as a result of what happened on Monday.
Well, as a matter of fact, we were on the list in his first term, and they sent, well, I can't remember his name, but the Interior Secretary out here, and they were smart enough to put him on a horse and have a photo taken like he's a conquering hero coming in saddleback, and flattered him, and what did whatever they needed to do. So at the end of that process, the recommendation was that they not make any changes to it. But to me, this is the handiwork of Steve Pearce. For people who don't remember, Steve Pearce represented this district in Congress ever since the death of, once again, Harold Runnels. Sometimes the names come to me and sometimes they don't. Yes, ever since the death of Harold Runnels, no, that led to Joe Skeens, and then Joe Skeens led to Steve Pearce. It's all coming back to me now. Anyway, Steve Pearce was a Republican who represented the district, with the exception of 1 year. He got beat 1 year, but he was like 12, for six terms total, I think. And he's an oil and gas guy. He made all of his money as an oil and gas guy in Hobbs, and that's what he knows. That's what he understands. And when he was made director of the BLM, I wrote a column saying this is what's going to happen. Well, actually, before he was made, when he was, I can't remember, before or after, anyway, sometime in that process. And sure enough, I mean, he's been in there, what, 3 months? And already they've got the bulldozers coming, and I'm sure they've been on the phone with the oil, you know, folks, and the contracts, if not drawn up already, are not far behind, and the drilling will begin soon. And so, you know, my understanding is that there isn't the same, you know, type of natural reserves at OMDP, and so maybe that spares us. I don't know.
He was definitely against it being designated.
He was definitely against it being designated.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, if you are for economic development, the OMDP makes much more sense as a tourist draw than it would for whatever resources are supposedly there. I mean, I've never heard of any even being under there except for what they used to mine, gravel and whatever.
Well, and I think OMDP has been there long enough now that we can say that all of the horror stories they told us would happen if they made it into a national monument have not happened. It's Todd Garrison, the sheriff at that time, told us it would turn into a drug corridor, where the police would be prohibited from chasing drug runners as they had a free run through the desert. That didn't happen. We were told that all of the ranchers would be, you know, wouldn't be able to tend their herd. They couldn't mend their fences and tend to their stock tanks and all the things. That didn't happen. You know, all the horribles, the huge list of horribles that, you know, we all remember. Anybody who lived through that, that was a very loud, long, contentious debate, and all of the things they told us would happen if we did, none of them happened. So I don't think that changes anything. I don't think Steve Pearce, you know, goes to bed at night and says, well, gee, maybe I was wrong about that. Maybe I better, you know, But yes, I don't. I have the same concerns that you do, and I guess I don't know what you can do to prevent it. Just wait and see.
Yeah, there are certainly groups that are ready to wage a counter campaign should such a thing be announced. But you know, you can't really act before anything has happened.
So. Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And we'll see what happens in Utah too. I mean, I know it will be opposed in the courts. I don't know enough about it to have any, you know, informed opinion as to whether it's a done deal and they just go forward, or whether there really is an opportunity to, you know, for the Native people and for others who will be harmed to have their day in court. I hope so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was disturbing. And like I said, it's something that happened in Utah and isn't getting a lot of attention, which is tragic because along with being, you know, sacred to people who have lived there longer than we have, it's also beautiful. I mean, it's really one of the most jaw-dropping, breathtakingly beautiful parts of the Mountain West. And why we wouldn't want to preserve that is, I just don't get it.
No, I think when you have somebody in charge who, like, never goes outside.
Yeah.
Except maybe to play golf.
That's right. His idea of nature is the fifth hole at Bedminster.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of not hearing about things, did you see that the Roswell Daily Record shut down?
I didn't.
Yeah. So they, after almost 125 years of publication, they have now gone out of business, turning Southern New Mexico into even more of a news desert than it already is.
It is. I'm trying to think. Adrian Hedden, who for years was the oil and gas reporter for the Sun News and really for all of Gannett, is now, and the only reason I know this is he is part of the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative, which is trying hard and working hard every day to piece things together. But yeah, he has got a newspaper down there that is trying to cover all of that area, the Hobbs, Carlsbad, and I don't know much about it. And I think he's even trying to come up to Ruidoso because they've lost theirs, and you know that whole area, Crowdcroft in there. I mean, you're right. There is just, as a former newspaper guy, it breaks my heart. It makes me real mad and all kinds of bad things. But, yeah, because nothing, you know, like I said, Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative is doing great work. They're funding interns. They're really working hard. Full disclosure, they're also have given grants to us. They've been supportive of us. They're really trying to keep journalism going. Saw this coming. You know, I still vividly remember the day it was the NCAA basketball tournament at the very early days of the internet, and it was one of the internet commercials. It was one guy with a phone and another guy with a newspaper. And the guy with the newspaper said, "Oh, it says here Johnson's out for today's game." And the guy with the phone says, "Nope, he's been cleared to play." And they had two or three of those. And I just looked at that and said, "Oh my goodness, we're done." You know, our once-a-day delivery model isn't going to work anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense for, you know, paper newspapers, but even newspapers with a really strong online presence have shed a lot of their investigative journalists.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, they seem to be struggling. So it doesn't bode well in terms of people actually knowing what's going on.
Not at all. Well, not only that, but it gives rise to people who want to be deceptive and want to fill that void. And you know, which brings us to the internet and the wonders therein. But it's not like there's no place to go get news. There's a million places to go get news, but none of them care a whit about Roswell. The ones that do, are going to be are going to be people who are not going to be journalists. And maybe that's a snobbish thing, but, you know, I went to journalism school. I learned all the basics. I started with the low-level job, and you work your way up. And by the time you get to be an editor, you feel like you've kind of earned, and all that's gone away. Now it's all being replaced by anybody who's got an internet hookup and an opinion.
Yeah, and there are certain epistemic practices that you learn as a professional, like how much proof do you need before you say something? Do you need more than one source to corroborate something before you say something? You know, anybody with an internet connection and a Substack can go ahead and make allegations about things, but that doesn't make them true, even if they're popular.
And there's a huge value to having other journalists in the room with you, mm-hmm. working on it with you, who don't have the same investment in it that you do, who can see weaknesses that you can't. And to having a senior editor at the top who has more experience and has been through those things. And, yeah, the value of all of that is what – and I'm not saying people didn't curse at the newspaper. They always did.
Sure.
But I think at the bottom line, there was a sense of trust that you knew that at least that story – had some grounding and it had some vetting, and I just think now all of that's gone, and that's why we become so cynical and distrustful of everything. And conspiracy theories are everywhere, because if you can't believe anything, I guess you can believe anything.
My goodness, over the past week, Mitch McConnell's office released a photo of him and his wife and a newspaper as like proof of life.
Exactly like the old kidnapping.
Yeah.
But
so many people then went on to ask one or another large language model. So they quote unquote asked AI, oh, is this a real photo? And like none of the large language models said, oh, yes, this is a real photo. Every one of them had a different answer about the way in which it was photoshopped or it was an AI photo. And, you know, so people's first instinct now is not even to use their brains. It's to ask a large language model, well, is it real? And those things, for a million reasons, are not a good place to go for an answer to such a question. So
yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, we haven't even gotten there. I mean, yeah, you don't even have to do the work anymore to be a reporter. You could just AI. What should I know about this? And away you go. we do have our callers usually break in at bad times. This one is a good time. So congratulations on your timing, caller. Thanks for calling. Please join in. What would you like us to know about?
Hi. I am just calling to very quickly announce that there is going to be an AI data center National Day of Protest on July 18th. And here in Las Cruces, we'll be meeting at 10 a.m. at the downtown plaza. And we would love for anyone who wants to stand up for this issue to come on out to the downtown plaza July 18th at 10 a.m.
Great. Do you know yet? Are you going to have any speakers or?
Well, we may have speakers, but it may just be an organizing of people to show up in numbers to record that they are essentially against AI data centers.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thanks for calling in and letting us know.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah, that's getting to be a national thing. And, you know, we're kind of right at the center of it.
We are. And in a certain way, we're sort of on the wrong side of the issue because a lot of places are doing moratoriums, but it's already... I'm not going to say it's too late Southern New Mexico, but we
but
are not in a good place.
Very late. Yeah, yeah. Well, and Peter and I were talking about it. I think the Environment Department is kind of the last, you know, that is the final approval before it seems like it's rolling down the tracks and you can't get ahead of it anymore. So, and interesting, we could talk about that a little bit. It looks like the Attorney General is going to look into these allegations. that Project Jupiter was fudging a little bit with the public comment part of that. And that would be interesting. I don't know. I mean, when you get into those regulatory boards and their decisions, it's just as dense as can be. And I don't know if legally, if even if they prove they did that, if that would impact the environment. I mean, certainly you would throw out those comments. But beyond that, would it be disqualifying in any way? Or I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, public comment, they can take it or they can leave it. It's not like they count them up and say,
no, oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's not a vote.
I'm not hearing any more about people standing in parking lots, like trying to solicit people's opinions about Project Jupiter or maybe just to get them to sign things. I had been a few weeks ago hearing that there were lots of young people who had been hired to sort of accost people in parking lots, but I'm not hearing that anymore. I don't know if it's stopped.
Yeah, well, if you're not hearing that, then it probably has, and you know they kind of got busted on it. But I don't know these people, so I'm making judgments about people that I don't know. I should make that clear. But you don't get the sense that they are overly concerned about public, about getting caught fudging and, you know, doing whatever needs to be done. Caller, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Becky from City Council. Well, just as a friendly reminder, it's me.
I knew your name all along.
I was just calling with two things. One sort of, well, three, if we're piling on to why Project Jupiter is terrible. But one little anecdote about Steve Pierce. I am also on the record of knowing that he's going to be bad for public lands. But part of that information came for me when I visited him when he was our congressperson in D.C. and I was doing some lobbying for an organization. And I went into his office, which was full, literally 0 inches available of exotic animal heads, including all of the kinds of animals that they put in a pen and they drug and shoot for people to do on a safari.
That checks.
And so if that doesn't tell us what kind of, like, shrinking bear's ears, maybe it makes it easier for him to go hunting or something. But it was so full of dead animals that I almost had to leave. It was horrifying. So I guess he does see another thing in the outdoors, and that's things to kill. And then the second thing I just wanted to, before you guys have your conversation, yes, the City Council, I think we had our first read of the repeal of the select committees at our last meeting on Monday. We will have our vote on repealing that section of the city's charter. So I just wanted to confirm and say hello and share a little anecdote of me being horrified in Steve Pierce's office.
No, I appreciate that. And like I said, I got to talk to him quite a few times when I was at the Sun News, never in his office, but that certainly checks. That doesn't surprise me at all. So thanks for calling
anyway,
in.
Thanks.
And give
thanks,
my best
guys.
To
have a good morning.
Give my best to Estrella. That's her dog.
Oh.
Her dog and my dog, Godzilla, good pals down at the dog park. So anyway. Yeah, more good stuff about Steve Pierce. That's probably our guest calling in. Down to our last 5 minutes. You want to talk at all about Todd Blanche?
Oh, yeah, that's happening right now. He is being grilled by the Senate Judiciary Committee.
He is. This one's going to be interesting, I think. You've got two people on that committee, Tillis and Cornyn, who, you know, don't have anything to lose anymore. They're not running for reelection. Cornyn got beat. Tillis decided to resign. And all it takes is one of them. And that would be very, very, very interesting to see Donald Trump's reaction if his attorney general nominee gets shut down in the Senate.
Well, I think all he would do is call people a bunch of names and then come up with some other equally inappropriate person to put forward.
Yeah, I think that's true. But look at, you know, all this, they're not passing the SAVE Act is just driving him crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that he can't snap his fingers and they jump, he doesn't know how to deal with it. And so he's denying them victories. They had a victory on this Housing Act. That was something that, it wasn't something, it was the only thing that they could go back to their districts since, I guess, since the Big Beautiful Bill. And for that, you have to convince people that a two-year break on TIPS and Social Security for 2 years, that thing expires in 2 years, you're going to have to convince them that that is equal to all the money to billionaires that will never expire. And that's a tough sell. But that's the only – this was going to give them one thing. That isn't about billionaires, that is about helping people trying to get into a house, and they took it away.
What I'm beginning to see is a shifting of the narrative toward characterizing the Democrats as like communists. You know, the sort of red baiting has become what they have been shifting towards.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what it is that is going to be the subject of the president's speech on Thursday evening. But I feel like that may be an indication of where this is going.
I've got a really good idea.
Oh.
It's going to be about the 2020 election.
Again?
Again. That's the whole reason he put this goofball Pulte in charge of the intelligence, is so that he can find what everybody else has been refusing to reveal, even though everybody else is working for him and loyal to him and slavish and all that. I feel fairly certain that that's what this is going to be about. Is we need to make these drastic, once again, the SAVE Act. It's all going to come back around to the SAVE Act. But he's going to say, we found these new things that prove that I really won the 2020 election, and that's why we need to make these dramatic changes for this year's election.
Dick Durbin, in his speech this morning, as they were opening the hearing, said, we've brought all kinds of people here, including state judges who are going to become federal judges. And when asked who won the 2020 election, they squirmed.
It's comical.
Yeah. They couldn't just say what happened. And so I haven't seen what Todd Blanche said about that because we've been here. But
yeah, that's right. I saw the same opening that you did by Dick Durbin. that's as far as we got.
Yep.
So, when we go home, we can get caught up on that. Let's see, a couple more minutes. Anything else we want to hear?
What is the state of New Mexico doing, if anything, with regard to the Cryptosporidia outbreak? I haven't heard any guidance from the state or from local health officials about what we should be avoiding, if anything. I mean, the CDC is kind of out to lunch on this, so it is concerning to me. I understand the Texas Health Department has found a few cases. I heard there was at least one case in New Mexico. So, yeah.
I'm not even familiar with that. It's a virus or what?
No, it's like a parasitic organism that lives on fruits and vegetables. And so far, something like 2,800 people nationwide have gotten very ill with this. I don't think anyone has died from it, but there have been many, many hospitalizations, and they still have not identified a vector.
That's not good.
Nope.